You're listening to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. The Arctic Council wrapped up its 10th annual ministerial meeting last week. Both U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and Russia's foreign minister were in attendance. The two nations are bound by a cooperative research agreement. And my next guest says that the coming year may well put Presidents Trump and Putin in the same room to discuss Arctic issues. Paul Berkman is professor of practice in science diplomacy at Tufts University's Fletcher School. Paul, nice to talk with you again.
Heather, it's nice to talk with you as well, and to the United States and other people.
A quick Arctic Council primer. Who are the members and what kinds of policies do they set?
The Arctic Council was established in Ottawa in 1996. It involves the eight Arctic states, if I can get them all correct in one shot, the United States, Canada, Norway, Denmark, Iceland, Finland, Sweden, and Russia. And also involves six indigenous peoples organizations as permanent participants. Subsequently, there have been a number of observers. There were one new nation, Switzerland, that was brought in as an observer this last meeting in Fairbanks. And there are a number of international organizations. I think there are about 21 nations and international organizations in addition.
So the Arctic Council last week, when they had their ministerial meeting, this is the top foreign ministers meeting, signed this cooperative science agreement. This is the first binding scientific agreement under the Trump administration. But what does this agreement actually commit us to beyond, say, the international collaboration that kind of organically takes place within the science community?
The science cooperation agreement is intended to enhance science cooperation. It identifies areas in the Arctic that will be facilitated in terms of enhanced access for various types of research. But more importantly, it represents a process that has been ongoing since the origin of the Arctic Council in terms of science and its role in terms of building cooperation and preventing conflict among nations.
Now, climate change is front and center in this new agreement, is, of course, a huge topic of both research and policy discussion when it comes to the Arctic. The Arctic is warming at least twice as fast as the rest of the globe. But the Trump administration has dismissed the scientific consensus on human-caused climate change. So how do you put those two things together?
Well, I think there was a statement. I was looking at some recent quotes from Secretary of State Tillerson, and he said, we're taking time to understand your concerns, but we're not going to rush. We're going to work to make the right decisions for the United States. I think this represents that there is a listening mode and that there is not an outright dismissal of the Paris Agreement. Which was certainly a concern expressed by some of the senior Arctic officials at the meeting in Alaska.
I mean, you said your concerns. Is Arctic warming not a concern for the U.S.? There are islands off the coast of Alaska, communities there that are going to have to be relocated because those islands are disappearing. We have a stake in subsea mining or shipping that might take place in the Arctic. Isn't this a U.S. concern as well?
I agree. But I'm not the Secretary of State. I think the statement can easily be construed in language picked up on individual words. I think the expression of intent, as I understand it and read and listen to the media, is that the United States is listening to the concerns of the other Arctic states, considering options and initiatives to go forward. This is, I think, an important discussion in terms of how the United States approaches science. And it clearly is, science is important to the United States in the sense that the U.S. has just signed a binding agreement dealing with science cooperation in the Arctic, recognizing that there were science marches across the United States representing concerns of the public. And I think the discussion about science in a general sense is important because it provides a pathway for nations to cooperate. And if you look at the Arctic, if you look at the Antarctic, and you look at outer space, these are three regions that the United States has been cooperating with Russia throughout the Cold War and subsequently. And the basis for those cooperation has been science.
How do you see the cooperation in those three places being kept separate or interacting with the tensions that are found in other parts of our relations, specifically with Russia?
I think the cooperation, science provides a path for nations to consider their common interests, to build common interests. And the challenges we face are global. I mean, climate is a representation of our global challenge. And the real issue behind climate is human population growth. I mean, so I think the period that we are at in our civilization is one of not thinking just in terms of data, but thinking in terms of evidence that contributes to informed decision-making. And that informed decision-making has provided a path, a bright light for nations to think in terms of their common interests. And the reason, the primary reason the United States and Russia have cooperated in the Arctic, in the Antarctic, and outer space has been because science has provided a vehicle for them to understand what their common interests are. The challenges we face elsewhere in the world are divisive and don't have these mechanisms that are readily apparent for nations to build common interests.
I mean, you're talking about science cooperation in the Arctic. As the Arctic warms, as ice shrinks, there are plenty of potential threats there. There are also increased opportunities for shipping and for seafloor mining and access to resources under the ice in the Arctic. The Arctic has kind of been portrayed in recent years as a bit of a Wild West, I mean, where there's a lot of competition and jockeying for those opportunities that may be coming, where Russia and China and the EU are essentially making undersea land grabs and political maneuvers. You say it's exactly the opposite, that this is an area of low tension and cooperation. So why is your perception so different from what has been portrayed largely in the media and maybe what the wider public perception is?
I think you've hit it on the head. There is a big distinction between what's portrayed in the media and the way that the nations are actually operating in the Arctic. So in terms of just evidence, in terms of the data points, the agreement that was just signed in Fairbanks involving the foreign ministers of the 8 Arctic states, plus the foreign ministers of Greenland and the Faroe Islands, was a third agreement. The first agreement was in 2011, dealing with search and rescue in the Arctic with a binding agreement. The second one was in 2013, dealing with marine pollution preparedness and response. And this was the third one, signed in 2017. And so there's a clear trajectory of cooperation among the Arctic states at the level of foreign ministers.
I mean, Russia has jurisdiction over or claims jurisdiction over nearly half the continental shelf in the Arctic Ocean, some of the richest energy deposits on Earth there. This can't possibly be a completely tension-free relationship.
Well, it's interesting. From my perspective, I've been in 4 meetings now with Vladimir Putin. I'm the only U.S. citizen that's been in all of the international Arctic forums in Russia, starting in 2010 in Moscow, 11 in Arkhangelsk, 13 in Salikard, and this year in Arkhangelsk again. In each of these meetings, now President Putin, it was Prime Minister the first meeting, mentions the Arctic as its economic future, as the economic future of Russia. Sir, it's true, Arctic, about half of it in terms of the area is, it falls within the sovereign jurisdictions of Russia. And if you think of it in terms of Russia's interests, the driving force of economic development in the Arctic is in itself a stabilizing feature, because it would be counterproductive for Russia or any of the Arctic states to destabilize the region. So for all of these nations to achieve economic prosperity and hopefully balance environmental protection and societal well-being, the region itself has to be stable. So it's, in one sense, entirely self-serving why this cooperation exists in terms of the economic development of the Arctic.
Finland is taking over from the U.S. Now as the head of the Arctic Council, and they've been pushing for a meeting not just of top ministers, but actually for the heads of state. This is the possibility that President Putin and President Trump could be in the same room talking about the Arctic. In your mind, what's the significance of that possibility?
So it's interesting. The concept of an Arctic head of state meeting has been introduced for probably the better part of the last decade. I started writing about this in 2009 when I convened the first formal dialogue between NATO and Russia regarding security in the Arctic Ocean, involving all of the Arctic states and four ministries in Russia and with representative to the president. The notion of an Arctic head of state meeting represents an evolution of cooperation in the Arctic. When the Arctic Council was established, the ministerial meetings, like the one we just had in Fairbanks, Alaska, were largely at the level of mid-level diplomats. In 2009, there was a meeting in Norway. At that meeting, convened by Johannes Gahr Støre, the foreign minister, Hillary Clinton was in representing the United States. The term peace was first introduced into the Arctic Council ministerial declaration. So up until 2009, even though the Arctic states found common Arctic issues in terms of sustainable development and environmental protection, it wasn't until 2009 when the meetings were elevated to the level of foreign ministers that the word peace was used. And thinking
Paul Berkman, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. Paul Berkman is professor of practice in science diplomacy at Tufts University's Fletcher School. Paul, thank you so much.
Thank you, Heather.